Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Friday. It's April 24th, 30 degrees here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Erica Martin. Good morning.
Good morning. So temperatures for today are going to climb into the low 50s, so a pretty nice day on tap, mostly sunny skies. Any clouds that you see that's developing later this afternoon would just be associated with an upper-level trough that's just going to kind of slide north of our forecast region, but still going to affect us in the way of clouds, but a very nice day and partly cloudy skies for tonight. Now, tomorrow we're climbing close to 60 degrees on Saturday. I'm kind of debating that 59-60. And then on Sunday we're seeing 64 degrees, but I did mention yesterday that we were tracking a little bit of a disturbance that could bring or squeeze out a few showers, and that's exactly what we're going to see on Sunday. So spot showers moving through. Overall, a pretty decent day, temperatures in the mid-60s. And overnight lows in the upper 30s. So a really mild weekend in the forecast. Temperatures are going to be favorable. By Monday, we're seeing mostly sunny skies, and we're going to trend sunny to mostly sunny at least through Thursday when we start to pick up on another system moving through that could bring us some showers. But we're going to see highs in the mid-60s on Tuesday and 70s on Wednesday and Thursday. Now, Thursday, we might hit mid-70s, so definitely keep in mind that you've got a nice stretch of weather in the forecast. Sunscreen necessary, sunglasses, and stay hydrated. A great stretch of weather, at least starting this weekend. So I'm really excited about this forecast. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. KPCW News Time now, 8:07. And with a look at our trails on the phone with us, Charlie Sturgis from Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. What a beautiful day. It looks like we're going to have a killer spring weekend. So the good news is, at least for the most part, we're not going to be talking about a lot of mud right now. We are seeing Round Valley dry out really pretty darn fast. These little storm patterns that come in and go do kind of set things back a little bit. But at this point, it seems like it's mostly willing to dry out pretty quick. So a lot of Round Valley is good to go. The obvious areas out there, like the Lost Prospectors, anything with a northern exposure or northern, northwest, northeast, you know, are not going to be good to go. They're still going to take time to dry out. One thing we would ask for folks to do is, you know, we have some hard closure gates out there and some signs for various trails to be closed. We are checking. The staff is out taking recon rides on a regular basis. So those signs are real. And as far as we're going to open things as fast as we can, but if you see a closed sign, try to really pay attention. I realize that it might be dry for the first quarter mile, even past the sign, but still, the trail somewhere is wet. It doesn't really help us out. So bear with us. Also, just keep proper physical physical distancing over the weekend. It's going to be hard. The parking lot's going to be crowded. The trails are definitely crowded. Just have fun and be safe out there.
Okay.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you, Charlie. KPCW News Time now, 8:09. It's 8:10. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Republic Services Manager of Municipal Services and Government Affairs, Reese DeMille. He has details about a $20 million assistance program. Then Park City Mayor Andy Bierman has a preview of this morning's council roundtable. That's happening at 9 a.m. this morning. And finally, Park City Summit County Arts Council Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder with details on how the arts community is trying to keep us creatively active during these times of isolation. Taking a look first at some local news now, Summit County officials are talking about starting some kind of reopening on May 1st, but done gradually and carefully while watching the medical data on COVID-19. At the same time, they are warning that when we return to normal, it may not exactly be like the old normal, and recovery is not going to happen quickly. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more.
At Wednesday's meeting of the Summit County Council, Deputy County Manager Janna Young said that under Governor Gary Herbert's color-coded system, the county is hoping to move from red, the current urgent response, to orange, which would be stabilization. She said green would be the final stage.
Green is being called the new normal. It certainly isn't going to be life as we knew it before this pandemic, but the new normal, and that is the least restrictive level. Most likely, we won't see that level until there's herd immunity And herd immunity is when 90% of the population has either had its combination of has either had the virus and is now immune to it, or there's, and then the other half or percentage is vaccinated.
Councilmember Roger Armstrong said that even locally, there's a debate among citizens about how fast to reopen. He said that on both sides, people are dealing with some difficult emotions.
You know, again, based on what I've heard from people in the community, there's, you know, an equal divide and equal amount of fear about what happens to us economically if we don't get back on track. We have people with food insecurity and housing insecurity concerns. And on the other side, we've got people that are actually quite frightened about moving too fast and opening up too much.
Meanwhile, Councilmember Glenn Wright told KBCW that they've made progress in monitoring the situation. He said they conducted over 2,400 tests in the past week. There were 1,100 tests done on Wednesday just at the Ecker Hill Park and Ride. In this round of tests, Wright said only 2 to 3% were positive. That compares to the state average of 5%. And Summit County was showing 20 to 30% positives a short time ago. He said the numbers show that social distancing and the other recommended precautions are working. He commended the citizens and urged them to keep it up next month.
And we will do some opening next month, but I think the entire population has to be wary. Do it carefully. Don't push the limits. Keep maintaining your social distance. And if we all do that, I think we'll have a successful, slow opening to the county. If we don't, we could be back where we were a few weeks ago.
Finally, Jenna Young told the council Wednesday that they could be feeling the impacts of the coronavirus outbreak for a long time.
And I think everyone needs to set the expectation that for several years forward, there's going to be some form of social distancing and sanitization occurring within our community. This is just sort of the where we are right now with the virus. And until there's a vaccination or a treatment, we'll have to continue implementing portions of those restrictions.
Deputy Summit County Manager Jana Young. For KPCW, I'm Rick Broth.
8:14. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Republic Services has launched a huge $20 million frontline employee and local businesses assistance program. On the phone to tell us about it, I have Reese DeMille. He is the Manager of Municipal Services and Government Affairs for Republic Services. Good morning to you, Reese.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us what you're doing. I have no background information on this at all.
Well, as a company, we obviously feel that this is a very unprecedented time, and it was a time that the company felt like they needed to step up and help the small businesses in particular, but businesses in general, and also take care of their employees. And they implemented launched a campaign called Committed to Serve. It's a $20 million company-wide recognition program of our frontline employees and also their families. So every week, our frontline employees, the company is buying a meal for their families and for them so that they can take that home. And then also giving gift cards to our employees to go out and use those gift cards in the community. At the small businesses, we're really trying to push that. Just up in Summit County themselves, over the last 4 weeks, our meals have been purchased at like Mirror Lake Diner, Summit Inn Pizza, Fuego, and River Horse Provisions. We're just trying to work with the local businesses and also take care of our employees. So it's a huge campaign. We have in Utah about 275 employees that are getting these meals and also getting these gift cards. And so it's a big campaign. We're really proud of it. Personally, I'm proud. I've been with the company for 17 years, but I'm proud of how the company's stepping up, taking care of its employees, but also trying to work with the small businesses and see if we can't help them in some way.
Sure. So the company, I mean, how many states do you guys operate in?
We're in 40 states and Puerto Rico.
Okay. So this has been happening then across all of those communities as well?
Absolutely. Yes. In our state to date, and we started this a few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, our state, we've spent about a little over $60,000 on food at local businesses, at local restaurants, and that with almost 300 employees being served on a weekly basis.
Yeah. So in addition to Summit County, where else do you guys operate? Because when I hear 275 employees, that doesn't sound like it doesn't sound like a lot.
Well, we've got, it's frontline employees. So managers and, they're not eligible. We're trying to take care of the frontline employees that are out there and about in the community every day. So we have more employees than that, but it's about 275 employees that are in this program getting this. We're in St. George all along the Wasatch Front from Box Elder down to Santaquin along the I-15 corridor and then in Twilla and obviously Summit County.
Ah, okay. So we're talking frontline, the drivers mostly, or do you have other
drivers,
people that...
Drivers, dispatchers, mechanics. Yep.
Okay.
Those are on the front lines for sure.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, and work goes on. So what kind of other precautions are these folks taking? I know, is it just a single driver in most trucks?
Yes. There are a couple of routes where we have to have what we call pull-out routes, where the containers have to be pulled out and it's just not doable by one person. But we've alternated and changed our routes and our shifts so that drivers are not all coming into the shop at the same time. So in doing that, we're social distancing is being adhered to. We've also have now a little mechanism on their phones where they can clock in and out so they're not having to go to a time card and all hands are on the same machines and all of that. So trying to make sure that sanitization and those type of factors are all being adhered to as well. All of our frontline employees, especially the drivers, have all sanitation supplies that they're using as well.
Okay. Let's see. Let's talk real just quickly. Of course, the contract for Summit County is coming up, I think, next year. But has Republic Services announced that they're going to go for it?
Oh, absolutely. We will. We're tied in, and we felt like we have had a very good relationship with Summit County in the years past, and we certainly want to continue to do that in years to come. And we're working with the county on trying to develop ideas of innovation and other things that we can do for them. So we certainly want to be there for many more years to come.
Sure. And you expect that you would be one of how many companies that would be bidding?
Well, when it went out to bid years ago, there were only two bidders that bid on it. It is a very, it's the toughest contract we have in the state for sure, just because of the transient nature of the people that come in and out for skiing, and the topography is tougher. So there will not be, this is not an easy contract. There's probably only two or three companies that could do this contract in the state anyway. So I would assume that, this is just my guess, I certainly don't have any inside knowledge on this, but I would assume that at most three, likely only two would bid on it.
Okay, yeah, I have no idea. I guess I don't pay that much attention to garbage trucks.
Yeah.
So is it all about coming in with the lowest bid?
Well, it shouldn't be, because you could get the lowest bid and then you could get a provider that can't provide the services. Because of the different nature of the contract, it's going to take somebody that has a lot of experience, that has done this in mountainous areas and other places, that can provide this type of service, because it is so different than just kind of flat land service that you have in other areas. So in the county, I really believe they're not going to look just at the lowest price. They're going to look at who can do this, who can be innovative, who can work with them in developing programs. I don't see them just going for a low price offer. That wouldn't work up there.
Right. And many of us remember suffering sort of the first few months of either not getting garbage picked up. I mean, there's just lots of reasons. One, they didn't know. And it, like you say, there's just some small cul-de-sacs tucked in or some strenuous topography to get to. So, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking that knowledge is pretty valuable in this case. Would we see anything like new cans or anything like that, any new technology with garbage pickup?
Well, the technology will be, I would think, I don't want to speak for the county, but I would think that we'd be looking at all types of different services, from food waste to different aspects of maybe green waste, some sort of other recycling or sustainability projects. I would think that they would want to put that in their RFP and see what that might come out. To be honest, a lot of cities talk about that and they want to do that. It is expensive to do those type of things, and you have to run a lot of that material down back down to Salt Lake, so you have to determine whether it's worth it or not to do that because of the location of where Summit County is. But I think that it will be looking at a lot of those things. And, you know, we certainly want to be on the cutting edge of the innovation side, but we also want to do it on a wise basis as well. Do you really want to put a program together and then drive the trucks, you know, 50 miles to get rid of the product? Does that in a sustainable nature, does that really make sense?
Right. Okay, Reese, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, Leslie, I appreciate you letting us talk about this. This is a big deal, and we're proud of our company, and certainly appreciate the relationship that we have with the county. Want to continue doing it.
Okay. Reese DeMille, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye.
Reese DeMille, again, the Manager of Municipal Services and Government Affairs for Republic Services. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, Summit County is easing its restrictions and is now allowing restaurants to offer in-house delivery service. That started yesterday. The original Health Department order issued March 14th prohibited restaurants from providing or starting new delivery services in the early days of the COVID-19 response to slow the spread. Pickup of restaurant meals was limited to curbside service only. Following an appeal to the health order, the health department has agreed to a series of guidelines to allow permitted restaurants in the county to deliver food directly to the doorsteps, including those of who are unable to leave their homes due to health, transportation, or other limitations. In a press release, Public Health Deputy Director Phil Bondurant said that it has always been his goal to restore service as soon as it was safely possible to do so. He anticipates that this will be the first of several announcements in the coming weeks that will open additional operations in the county. Bondurant added that it is vital that the community continues to practice social distancing and other measures to allow for these openings to stand. Trained and certified restaurant staff must adhere to the Summit County Health Code's delivery protocols and standards. It includes compliance with the social distancing orders that were found in the Joint Public Health Order 2020-03. Third-party food delivery is prohibited until further notice. The Summit County Environmental Health Division has registration information. Restaurant owners and managers can contact the Environmental Health Division at 435-333-1502.
Hello, this is Diane Reinhart with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. We are a proud supporter of KPCW and have been providing our clients with real estate services since 1976. All current and active listings can be found on our website at bhhsutah.com, and our agents can help navigate the real estate market.
Well, Utah announced a new branch of Utah's COVID-19 task force in order to take on issues impacting Utah's minority populations. KPCW's David Boyle has more on that.
Utah Governor Gary Herbert said that while all of Utah's residents are feeling the impact of COVID-19, the effect is especially strong on multicultural communities.
We have found by data that we have maybe some more significant challenges with our minority groups, some just because we have language barriers that are maybe in the way and some cultural barriers. And we're concerned of making sure that they understand and get the information necessary for them to survive.
In addition to continued translation of state communication, the state announced the formation of the Multicultural Task Force Subcommittee. Nubia Pena, director of the Utah Division of Multicultural Affairs, says in order to establish a baseline and identify gaps, the division conducted a survey of those working with underserved communities.
Our findings showed that many people in these communities are worried about their basic needs, including food, housing, and employment. If they do get sick, they have limited healthcare options, especially if they do not speak English, do not have benefits, or they live in rural areas or on tribal lands.
Language, misinformation, and access to computers and technology all serve as barriers for underserved communities to access resources and information. Byron Russell, co-chair of the Utah Multicultural Commission, adds that the announcement is not a response to issues, but a proactive approach that they've been working on for 6 weeks.
If you look at the survey that was put out, you'll see that it was very, very well thought out. There were 93 responses from leaders in our community, and we did our best best to get those out last month.
Pena adds that the next step for the subcommittee will be directed through grassroots response.
A lot of the efforts that will be developed by this subcommittee will be influenced by the people on the front lines that understand the gaps. So whether that is having individuals that speak multiple languages to help provide resource navigation, we are mindful of the gaps that exist. So we are looking to see how we leverage resources amongst these partners to ensure that our community's needs are being addressed.
More information on the committee can be found on kpcw.org. I'm David Boyle, KPCW News.
8:27 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, coming up at 9 o'clock this morning, you can join Mayor Andy Bierman and others for a community conversation about the stabilization phase of the COVID-19 pandemic and what is next for Park City. On the phone to give us an update, I have Andy Bierman. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Leslie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Hi. So this is starting in just a half an hour at 9 o'clock. What will be your message for residents then?
Well, really, I'm mostly just a facilitator for this morning's chat. What we tried to do is bring together a panel of experts in four different areas that are going to talk about what it looks like moving from the urgent phase to the stabilization phase.
All right.
So, do you want to hear about the panelists?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got Rich Bolo coming in from he's the Summit County Health Director, and he's going to talk about the health aspects of the next stage. We have Katie Wright from the Park City Community Foundation, where she's the Executive Director. She's going to talk about the people element. We have Tom Fisher, who is the County Manager, that's going to talk about the government's involvement in all this and the impacts. And then lastly, we have Max Doilney, who is a Park City Council member and has been very involved with the economic task forces. And he's going to talk about the economic impacts.
All right. So people will be able to join either Facebook Live or through a Zoom webinar, and they can just get those links online at parkcity.org. Is that how it's going to work?
Yeah, correct. If you go to parkcity.org, you'll be able to find those links, as well as we sent out. Anybody that receives a city newsletter should have got one last night with all the connections.
Yeah. Why is doing something like this important?
Wow. You know, it just seems like right now our residents are really starved for information and contact. And I've seen quite an uptick. A large part of my job is just responding to emails and texts and calls from concerned citizens, people with questions, business owners, stakeholders. And I would say, I'm spending the large part of my day right now having those kind of communications. And people really want to learn more about what's going on, be prepared, understand it. So about a month ago, we started putting these extra virtual cafes in place, and now we're doing three a week, one on Tuesday mornings with Tim Henney's been leading those and bringing in various council members. And then on Wednesday afternoons, we just added one for the Latinx community. It's an all-Spanish cafe, and the response has been tremendous. I think our first one had over 230 participants. And then each Friday morning, Max and I have been doing a local roundtable that's mostly been focused on small businesses, but this week we're opening it up to broader topics.
Yeah, I did notice, scrolling through saw the, the Spanish, the forms that were done in Spanish. I mean, huge numbers of just people viewing. No comments there. So are you getting some feedback, or is it the question, it's happening within the within the forum itself, because I'm not going to sit there and listen to it since I can't understand it.
I know. You and I have the same challenge. I think they're getting a lot of comments that are coming in during those broadcasts. I would recommend that you bring in probably Lin-Ware Peak, our engagement director at the city, or Diego Zagara, who is he's helping coordinate this through the Solomon Fund and the Park City Community Foundation, and they can get into the details of how that's all working. But my understanding is it's been incredibly successful, and there's really strong interest, and I feel bad we didn't start doing this earlier.
Yeah. So how is this morning going to work? You've got yourself and four others. Do each of the guests just get a few minutes then to kind of talk about what's going on? Or is it just people raise their hands and get questions answered?
Yeah, I'll do a really quick intro, and then we'll switch to our guests. I'll probably have them each start off with a topic, and then we'll take questions coming in off of Zoom and Facebook Live. and it's a bit of a juggling act. I have greater empathy for you and your soundboard while you interview, as we try to sort through questions and facilitate these. But everyone we've had so far, we've had more questions than time. So I expect to hear a lot of good questions from the public, and we'll try to get as many as possible answered. And typically those that are left over, we try to answer by text and post afterwards.
All right. And as you mentioned, we're moving into the stabilization phase. What should we expect to happen first within the city limits?
Well, I want to set expectations on this. I think the stabilization phase is going to be a very slow entry. I expect that people will still be strongly encouraged to stay at home and limit their socializing. Where you'll see a bit of a change is you'll slowly see the economy turn back on. More businesses opened under very specific and strict circumstances. And then you'll see monitoring how that impacts things. Our numbers have been going in the right direction. We've had very few new cases despite a lot of testing. But as we reopen things, we're going to continue to test and monitor very closely. And if the trends start going in the wrong direction, then we're probably going to have to ratchet things back. So in May, I think you'll be able to see. I don't want to get into specifics. I think that's something a better question for our health director. But you'll see things slowly look a little more normal, a little more loosening. But largely, we're gonna see it need to stay tight for another month or two, until we get into yet the next phase.
Yeah, City Council has already spent some time looking at budget cuts for the current fiscal year. Were those put into effect already?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them were put into effect 5 weeks ago. As soon as we saw this coming down, many of those cuts were put into place by the city manager. But he has been keeping the council posted, and he's continued to refine those and go deeper. And then we've revised we're going to have to do a provisional budget, I think, this spring, just not knowing how long this is going to go and what the impacts are going to be on next winter. That's looking at very dramatic cuts in our budget and a very conservative approach going forward. And then if things improve and look better, we'll go back and revise that and move it up a little. But we want to plan for the worst case scenario or close to it.
Right. And a budget for next fiscal year would start, what, July 1?
It would start July 1.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is the proper budgeting term, but we're looking at this as a provisional budget, and in terms of we're putting it in place with, we're trying not to have to radically cut back on expected services. And we're trying to not, although we're really going to manage what we have in place in terms of workforce, we don't want to cut things so far that if the economy reactivates, that we can't provide, say, the transit services that are needed and the other services that are needed. So we're going to be walking a fine line there. And I think that the reality is we are likely going to be back in August or September to make some revisions to the budget to adjust up or down.
All right. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that. At the most recent JTAB, the Joint Transit Authority Board meeting, there was some decision to cut back the transit system. Any idea how long that will last? I mean, are we talking about even more cuts than we would be during this time of year, the mud season, the slow season?
Yeah, we are. We've cut it lower than we probably, than we ever have in terms of we only have our essential routes in place, and then we're using Dial-A-Ride to fill in for some people that say need trips to the hospital and such. So we've really both reduced our costs and our exposure to our drivers. But the need for the transit is down significantly. It goes way down this time of year regardless, but then with a lot of people not currently working, they don't need it to get to work, and people staying at home don't need it to get around. So really what we're trying to do is provide the bare minimum that needs to be there for those that are transit dependent at this point, that they don't have alternatives, they don't have their own vehicles, and they still need to use it. So we're trying to find that line, but we have cut it way back as both a cost savings measure and as a health measure.
Yeah. And we had heard that even keeping current services as we've known them over the last few years will be a difficult task, especially with staffing. So we've got decreased sales taxes that would support transit. Does that mean that any kind of a system expansion that we were talking about is pretty much out the window at this point?
In the very short term, yes. In the long term, I don't believe so. It's a little bit murky how quickly we'll recover from this, but when we recover from it, we're going to emerge and have the very same challenges we had when we went into this crisis. I don't think it doesn't change anything about our geography being in a narrow valley with only two entries. It's still going to be, even if tourism changes somewhat, I think we're still going to be a place that a lot of people want to visit, and that's going to require a lot of service workers. And so we're going to have to be prepared to continue to ramp up our transit system and put some of the pieces in place that we were working on before this crisis hit. What I see, though, is probably it's going to take us a little bit longer just due to the economic impacts. And there probably will be an ease off on traffic for the foreseeable future. So we'll have a little bit of time. But at this point, I'm hopeful we'll use that time to better prepare and be ready when traffic ramps up again.
All right. And then where do things stand with like the Arts and Culture District? As we know, I mean, it's tough out there for nonprofits and especially, you know, places like Sundance and the Kimball Arts Center. So are we moving forward with the planning on that? I mean, do we really have a viable project given that, well, you know, again, funding cuts to some of them?
Well, again, I think when we get back to normal, whenever that is, many of the community desires will still be the same. And I think right now we're seeing the hazard of having a one-dimensional economy. And we've always thought that arts and culture would enhance us culturally and be a great benefit to the residents, but it would also add another dimension to our economy, as well as it provides much-needed housing in the transit hub. So none of that's changed. You are correct, though. We're being very cautious with the city budget. Our two main stakeholders in this, the Kimball Arts Center and Sundance, are in a very difficult position in terms of fundraising and their own budgetary challenges right now. So what we're doing is we're slowly moving forward with our planning process, and we are going to do the preparation on the site, get it ready for construction, and continue to work with our stakeholders and monitor the situation. At this point, the city council is very committed to moving forward. We think this is the right project. We think there could be some opportunities coming out of this with stimulus packages for infrastructure and projects. And if we're shovel ready, we might be able to get some federal or state help on this when it comes time. And it might also be a boost to our local economy to work on this and push it forward. So we're being as prepared as possible, but we're also being very careful not to take on any large expenditures at this point and any things that could further compromise us if things get worse and we need to delay.
Yeah. And so the plan is still to have those tenants move out by September 1?
Yeah, we're still planning to have everybody move out by September 1 and start site prep this fall.
All right. Any announcements with regard to the appeal there on the Woodside Phase 2? Do you know what's going on with that?
You know, Leslie, I don't. Okay. I probably should, but I haven't heard anything out of planning recently or legal on that. But I'm happy to check, and next time I'm on, I'll give you an update.
Okay. Anything else you want to add?
No, I do hope people will join us this morning. We tried hard to put together a really good panel to answer questions, and these have been nice opportunities for the public to interact. It's kind of a two-way street. I think the public is starved for information, and as elected officials, we really want to hear from everybody right now. We know it's a hard time, and we know there's a lot of hardship, a lot of frustration, a lot of anxiety, sort of all over the spectrum, and it's helpful for us to know what's going on out there. So anybody that's interested, I encourage them to tune in and give us their thoughts today.
Okay, and then again, you'll be doing three of these each week then, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Fridays?
Yep, Tuesday and Wednesdays are at 9 a.m., and then I believe Tuesday and Fridays are at 9 a.m., and Wednesday, I believe, is at 3 or 3:30.
Okay. Mayor Andy Bierman, thanks for your time this morning.
Okay, thanks, Leslie, and everybody stay safe and stay healthy.
KPCW News Time now, 8:41. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, COVID-19's impact on life in Wasatch County has extended to the largest economic project there. KPCW's David Boyle reports that non-essential construction at the Mayflower Mountain Resort has come to a halt.
Senior Vice President of Development at Extel, Kurt Krieg, reported to the MIDA Development Review Committee on Tuesday that for safety reasons related to COVID-19, non-essential construction activity has been suspended at the project area located near the Jordanelle.
I have to be clear on non-essential. So our water tank valve housing was going on, but we did complete the water tank and are getting ready to fill that. The pedestrian tunnel, the retaining walls, the roadways, all of those are really non-essential.
Krieg says they're continuing to move forward on environmental projects such as the voluntary cleanup program. He adds they're working on acquiring a type of bonding known as Commercial Property Assessed Clean Energy, or CPACE. Krieg says they're looking to have $78 million in cost issued through the CPACE, which is to be used for energy-efficient building construction. CPACE must be issued in conjunction with a construction loan.
So right now, we're monitoring the lending markets on construction loans. As you all probably read and hear, the leisure market has been hit the hardest with this pandemic, and most hotels have a 0% occupancy. So lenders are a little bit nervous now. So we're monitoring that as we come and get ready to go vertical.
Once they can, Extel will get restarted on those suspended projects, including civil improvements.
The water tank is fully completed, 1.2 million gallons, and are on the valve station and the pumps. They are furthering the retaining walls on Mayflower Village Drive, as well as grading. We have the pedestrian tunnel from a concrete standpoint complete. We need to go back and put in the lighting and finalize that. And then the other major initiative is we're nearly complete with the voluntary cleanup. We're in what's called the voluntary cleanup wrap one, which is a remedial action plan one, which basically encompasses the entire development area. And we will look to finish and finalize that wrap.
Krieg says they're close to finalizing their military hotel building permit with MIDA. He also says they're closing on a decision for hotel branding as they are down to two candidates. I'm David Boyle, KPCW News.
It's 8:44. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. In an effort to promote active creativity during a time of isolation, the Park City Summit County Arts Council has launched a social media campaign, Art Connects Us. On the phone to tell us more about it, I have the Executive Director of the Arts Council, Jocelyn Scudder. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us what it is that you're doing.
Sure. Well, I mean, as everyone knows, we are all, you know, globally in a really difficult situation right now, and we are all doing our best to cope and get through this pandemic in any way we can. And you know, we recognize that there's been severe hardship faced by many, and I mean, I personally, and I know we are all inspired by the amount of support that our mountain community has shown towards our vulnerable populations during this crisis. So we've been so inspired by everyone doing their part to kind of bring an end to this thing. But one thing that, you know, in the cultural sector, I've been incredibly proud of arts and culture nonprofits, specifically, you know, nonprofits in general have very delicate funding streams. And, you know, this is a very uncertain time, but our arts and culture nonprofits have shown such perseverance and goodwill by continuing to provide really impactful creative experiences digitally to continue connecting our community. And so to really highlight that, the Arts Council launched back in, really when this first started back in mid to late March, we launched a social media campaign called Art Connects Us. And there's kind of two components. One is every day we focus on a different, or every week we focus on a different creative theme during this time of isolation. And so we've explored a lot of different creative experiences where we ask the community to engage via social media. So we've asked people to share their museums from home and talking about their personal collections. We've asked them to sketch your quarantine buddy or to shake up some anxiety with social distancing. Nice little pun there. So we've been trying to have fun with it and be a positive light during this time. And then in addition to encouraging people to be creatively active on a weekly basis and a daily basis, we've also been consistently highlighting the amazing work that our arts and culture nonprofits are doing during this crisis to remain relevant, keep their programming going. They're innovating on digital platforms, which is, you know, it's new for all of us. But it's been inspiring, and I'm really proud of everything that our local cultural sector is doing to keep our community connected through the arts.
Okay. Well, so you've done put together a bunch of different events. Let's start with the virtual gallery tour. That's happening this evening.
That is happening this evening. Thanks for bringing that up. So we have, obviously, the Park City Gallery Stroll is a really fun event. I love going to it. You go out and grab a drink with friends. You bring your family. You go to a restaurant, grab a drink, grab dinner, go to galleries. It's great. So we wanted to emulate that. We were obviously disappointed that these events kept getting canceled. And so the Arts Council pitched an idea to the Gallery Association saying, hey, let's try a virtual gallery stroll. And so we reached out to the entire association, and we had 12 galleries buy in. And they are all going to be leading 15-minute tours tonight on their individual Facebook Live pages. And then the Arts Council will also be streaming the entire night live from our Facebook page. So you can find it on many different platforms. And it's been really fun to experiment, talk to the gallerists. We're walking through many people on how to do a Facebook Live. So again, it's an experiment, but one thing that I'm really excited about is many of them are going to be talking about the local artists that they represent and talk about those collections to make sure that we're supporting our local artists who are represented in those galleries. And then to really emulate the feeling of being out in Gallery Stroll as best we can. We realize it's not perfect, but we did forge a partnership with the Restaurant Association, which was exciting because, you know, when you think about Gallery Stroll, there's always a shared benefit. Galleries benefit and restaurants benefit because it brings people to Main Street and out on the town. And so we partnered with the Restaurant Association, and we have a discount code. So if you order tonight before the Gallery Stroll starts, which it starts at 6 p.m., and you use ARTS over the phone and you call to take an order, you can get between a 15 to 25% discount from participating restaurants. And those restaurants include River Horse Provisions, Tupelo, Hearth and Hill, Fuego Bistro and Pizzeria, and Element Kitchen. And so it's a really great way to make sure that people are supporting their restaurants as well, get some curbside pickup, take out art in, and it's an experiment, but I think it's going to be really fun.
All right. Also, one of my favorite events, the Monster Drawing Rally, was also postponed. Any ideas what you can do to make up that?
Yeah, and so while I may be putting the cart before the horse here, but the Arts Council and the Kimball really wanted to make sure that we were continuing to serve our individual creatives, which the Monster Drawing Rally is a perfect example where we have 40 individual artists who are creating work, they're building connections with potential collectors, they're sharing ideas with each other. It's one of my favorite events. And so rather than, we are postponing it physically, and, you know, obviously all events are really unknown right now, but we decided to forge ahead with the May 15th date and host a digital Monster Drawing Rally. It's kind of Monster Drawing Rally rewired. And so we'll be having a press release formally going out next week, but kind of a sneak peek and high-level idea of what this is we are going to ask all of the artists that wanted to participate in the physical Monster to participate in Digital Monster, and we'll be doing a live Zoom party, art party, where all of the artists will be creating artwork live via Zoom. You can log in. We'll be launching that on our Facebook Live pages, and as well as the Kimball Facebook Live. And we're in the midst of building an e-commerce platform so that people can buy art online during the event that night. So there's a lot of details still to be ironed out. Again, this is a creative experiment, but we are doing our best to make sure that we are continuing to keep our creative individuals engaged as well, create revenue streams for them to sell artwork, and connect them with potential new collectors. I think the one benefit of moving to a digital platform is there is a potential to have way more engagement than a physical event where we get around 200 to 250 people. And with digital, we might be able to get, you know, hundreds more tuning in. So it's something that we're really excited to launch officially next week and put out a press release about the partnership and the pivot to digital for Monster Drawing Rally.
Okay. And again, that's set for May 15th then.
That is set for May 15th. And that was the original date if none of this had happened and we were rolling forward as normal. It was always planned for the 15th.
Okay. Let's see. And just a number of other virtual event highlights. We've been talking about the Park City Library, Story Times, the Arts Council hosting a Zoom class called Recycle Art with EQL. Tell me about that.
Sure. So as you know, and I know I've been on your show to talk about it, we have been operating out of the old Zoom building, and we popped up a kind of temporary studio and gallery space with 15 local artists in residence. And EQL is actually Emily Quinn Laughlin. She's one of our artists in residence, and part of her art practice is upcycling materials through her. So she uses all recycled materials in her art practice. And so she's been just having fun hosting weekly Zoom calls for anyone who wants to join in and teaching recycled art classes, so creating art out of upcycled materials. Those have been really fun. They're free. They're always on our website if you want to check them out. Just go to pcscarts.org, and you can tune in and, get innovated with some of the materials that you have around the house. So that's been great to maintain momentum with Create PC, keep those artists engaged. Tonight, the Follies is hosting their Facebook Live event. So tonight is a very artful evening, and I hope that people tune in to both the Follies and the Gallery Stroll, get some takeout. The Park City Institute is working on putting together some digital experiences. Park City Film has their virtual cinema screenings and some curated film picks. So this is where I talk about, I'm filled with a lot of pride that when I talk to all of these arts and culture organizations who are working tirelessly with no, earned income coming in right now, their facilities shut, they're still bringing arts to the community, staying positive, innovative, being creative problem solvers. And I think we're really fortunate to have such a dedicated and motivated cultural sector here in our mountain town.
Okay, Guy, got a lot going on for not a lot going on.
I know. I did want to pitch one other thing. The two public art boards that exist in the county, so the Park City Public Art Board and the Summit County Public Art Board, partnered with the Arts Council, and we are doing a really easily accessible public art project, and it's a community public art project called Chalk Your Walk. And so this is where we are just asking people to bring a little color and positivity to our sidewalks, and encouraging drawing or writing of messages of strength, calm, and togetherness on your sidewalks in your community. And we're going to be doing this through April and May. And so if you're outside using chalk and creating positive images to brighten up everyone's day as they're taking walks outside, we ask you to just use the hashtag ChalkYourWalkSummitCounty. And if you tag Arts Council, Summit County, Utah, and Park City Government, you can share those creations and just, share some light. And I think what's going to end up coming out of this is, colorful creations all over town. And I know a lot of people are trying to get outside right now to just stay sane. And so to beautify those sidewalks and lift people up through art is going to be, I think, the benefit of launching this community public art project.
Okay.
So, yeah, a lot going on. Many people are turning to the arts right now, and we are not slowing down.
All right, Jocelyn, I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
Jocelyn Scudder is the Executive Director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. KPCW News Time, 8:56. Well, as taxing entities head into budget season, they're facing a lot of uncertainty as the economic impacts of the coronavirus really aren't known. That's also the case for the Park City Board of Education, who is currently in salary and benefit negotiations with their staff. With 2.5 months left of this fiscal year and 98% of the tax revenues collected so far, Park City School District Business Administrator Todd Halber says the district is in good shape for now.
We're looking pretty positive. We're good on the property tax front. The state legislature did not cut the FY20 budgets in their special session, so we're expecting regular distributions from the state for those dollars. We'll be a little bit tight on our fee-based programs, so our after-school food services, those types of programs, because we're not collecting revenues on those programs yet. We're maintaining all of our employees on payroll. So that'll be a little bit tight, but we should be able to come out of the school year just fine.
The district is expected to lose about $200,000 from fees it usually collects. For next fiscal year, school districts are waiting for the state legislature to make any adjustments to the appropriation that it had already approved during the session earlier this year.
As you recall, when they closed out the session just a couple months ago, they were looking at 6% on the weighted pupil unit. So that was the largest increase ever that the state has seen on the WPU. But now going into the special session, they're going to need to revise that as they look at the economic impact to the state. And there's some uncertainty there, so we're not sure what the increase will actually look like.
And during their special session, lawmakers will just be considering whether the weighted pupil unit needs to be adjusted. The plan, he says, is to move forward with the constitutional amendment request that will be on November's ballot. If that's approved by voters, education in the future would essentially be held harmless. Lawmakers agreed to give school districts the same amount of money plus more for new growth. Hauber says that is not triggered, though, unless the amendment is approved by voters.
This is a solution that comes a little too late for the current situation. But in the future, I think it'll give us a good basis to move forward.
Teacher negotiations are also ongoing, and he says there's no way to say how they may be impacted by the economic situation.
We're still in those discussions. I don't know that they're on pause. They might move a little slower as we wait for pieces of information, but the discussions are ongoing, and hopefully we'll be beneficial as we get to the end of the negotiation season.
The school district has more than $12 million in the rainy day fund and almost $22 million in its capital fund. But Hauber says those are funds needed for emergencies, not for ongoing funding in future years.
As we build budgets, we may dip into the one-time funds or those rainy day funds if we think there's a better revenue picture 12 months out or closer. So we just want to be careful as we look at those fund balances. But they are there for these types of situations.
That's Park City School District Business Administrator Todd Hauber. He added that House Bill 357 will allow school districts to use their capital funds for operations, but that's contingent on the November vote, and that ability is not available for this fiscal year.